Hey guys, John Paulamy here, Actionable Intelligence. Today is Saturday, May 6th, and this is the weekly market update. The disclaimer, anything that you hear or see on this podcast or video is not to be taken as investment advice. I am not a registered financial advisor. I cannot give individual investment advice. This is for informational purposes only. Please do your own due diligence and research. It's your money. It's your responsibility. Before I get started, I'd like to have a housekeeping note, and there's a couple subscribers to the newsletter, to the Actionable Intelligence Alert newsletter. I hope they're listening. I've tried to reach out to them. They're not getting the newsletter. What I've noticed is there are certain email addresses, typically hotmail.com. For some reason, for many people that use Hotmail email addresses, they have trouble getting the, not all of them, but some of them have trouble getting the newsletters, even emails going back and forth from my Gmail account. So if you are not getting the newsletter and you have a Hotmail, even if you're not getting the newsletter and you think you should be, check your spam, search your spam folder, look for it, because sometimes, a lot of times it just goes to spam for some people. If not, reach out to me at, john.paulamy@gmail.com. Maybe even use a different email address to interact with me. Also, if you're a subscriber, you have access to the Discord, hit me up, message me in the Discord, or on Twitter, DM me. I want to, make sure people are getting the newsletter that they paid for. And some people, I just can't get comms with them, feel free to avail yourself of any, opportunity to reach out to me. But there's something with these Hotmail addresses. Not everybody, because we have several other people that have these email addresses and they have no issue. But please, please check your spam and reach out to me if you're not getting it. Okay, let's get into the news for this week. So, obviously, the news item that's dominating the headlines, obviously, is the banking crisis that we're having. We're having bank failures, and I alluded to it a little bit last week, but some good charts came out. This is from U.S. Global Investors. Again, Frank Holmes puts out this weekly information thing. It's called Frank Talks. It's free. He has a lot of good charts on here, so this is where this came from. But anyways, it shows that the total assets lost in bank failures during this current bank failure cycle have exceeded those during the financial crisis, which I find interesting. And you have, far less banks. I think it's actually four banks now. I'm not keeping track of everything minute to minute. But anyways, and so far, the narrative that's being promulgated by Jay Powell. I thought it was interesting during the this week when they raised rates again, and he gave his statement, and he kind of said during the statement that he gave that they felt like the banking crisis was under control, and then like 2 hours later, another bank was like in trouble, right? It was all over the news. So a lot of people have a lot of confidence in government, and these people, what I call the pointy shoes or the Sharpies. I don't. Everybody thinks that there's some master plan they're running. I don't believe that for a minute. And I think they're just reacting all the time, constantly reacting. I think that, but people could say, well, what do you know? You're just some doofus on YouTube saying things. Well, I think you can look back at the, from the Greenspan era forward. I mean, what is monetary policy? What is raising and lowering interest rates and QE done except for increase the level of wealth for the upper classes? I'm not going to crab. I think Howard Marks described it. I benefited from it. I'm benefiting from it. That's why we have the newsletter. That's why we talk about these videos. In a perfect world, I would change everything. I would have sound money and We wouldn't have QE, and we wouldn't have banks taking all of these risks, and we would have people like, you know, at JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs are doing all this prop trading and doing all taking all these risks to juice their profits so they can get higher bonuses. They would be on the hook for these things. They would, you know, force them to be partnerships, so they have to endure the losses themselves. Okay, so anyway, I'm not. That's never going to happen. So it's not even, you know, it's really fun to sit around and, you know, talk about these things, you know, coffee house or sitting around a fire, having drinks, talking about, you know, but this isn't going to happen. This is, you know, we have to understand, as Pontius Pilate said to Ben-Hur in the movie Ben-Hur, to Charlton Heston, you know, the adult man knows the world he lives in and he adapts himself to it. So it's one of my favorite scenes in that movie. So that's what we're doing here. So we're looking at what they're doing, and you know, we're going to have to adapt ourselves to it. How, where do opportunities open themselves up? What is actionable? Because no one's going to consult with, you know, a doofus, 56-year-old doofus on YouTube. Nobody cares what I say or what you think or say. This is this whole thing is run for the benefit of a small class of people at the top. And so, you know, you can ride along. So it's kind of like, you know, the situation like Howard Marks talked about recently, you know, if you go to the airport, you know, those, I mean, they don't have them in every airport, but in a lot of them, you know, like when the gates are real long, gate areas, they have those people mover things, you walk and it kind of, you're walking on a treadmill, but it's like 150 feet long, but you don't really sense, you're walking faster and you have this thing helping you, but you don't really sense it, right? That was kind of the environment we were in for the last 20 years with rates coming down from the, you know, or even longer, 40 years, you know, with the rates overall tumbling from the Volcker highs down to the 5,000-year civilizational lows over the last couple of years. And now the most rapid, we had that benefit of that wind in people's sails. And I think that that's changing now for many reasons, which we're not going to get into. But obviously, you know, the thesis, the thing that we've been talking about here on these videos and in the newsletter is, you know, we've seen the most unprecedented, quickest change in policy and raising of rates. And it was inevitable in an environment where an economy that's completely dependent on low interest rates, when you do that, you know, it's a shock to the system. So we're now seeing things break. That's what we talked about. I mean, it's a cliche. A lot of people are, you know, use that term. You know, they're going to raise rates till something breaks. Well, things are breaking. And so this is a time to be vigilant. This is a time to be patient. This is, you're now in an era, in a cycle, in a time, space, okay, area that Buffett and Munger, this is how they got rich. You have to be patient as the values now get created by this monetary policy that's kind of like a wrecking ball going through the markets. It's destroying these markets that were not set up for these rates being this high. So I expect to see more of this. What's happening? Well, you know, I mean, the banks, you know, banks are kind of, you know, they lend short, or they borrow short and lend long. And then they've got cattywampus with these rates increasing so high. A lot of banks were not prudent in their hedging or their structuring. And so now they've been caught off sides. And as deposits flow out of banks, because banks are not paying any money, okay? Most banks do not pay anything on your savings account, you know, very little even still. So people are moving things to brokerage account, money market funds, or using Treasury Direct, or whatever to get, you know, you got a five handle now on interest rates on T-bills. Why would you risk-free and a risk-free asset? You have a risk-free return. Well, technically, let's just say for purposes of discussion, but literally 99.99%, you know, risk-free return by just sitting in short-term T-bills. Okay. And they don't fluctuate in value as long as you, you know, buy T-bills, which bills are 1 year instruments or less, 3, 6, 12 months, I believe. I think they have 1 month bills, but anyways, you get the point. And so people are like waking up and going, well, you know, hey, I can do all this on my iPhone during my lunch break. You know, I can open up an account at Schwab, get a money market fund, I can then link my bank account directly with, you know, that account, and then I just swipe to the right and the money moves over there. So it's not like you have to go to the bank and get a cashier's check like back in, you know, 1978 or 1982. You know, when you wanted to buy T-bills back then, I remember when they were high, you know, you had to make an effort. I mean, I remember my grandparents were, you know, had went through the Depression, so they had their money spread. You know, they all they did was work and save money, you know, so they didn't go on vacations, they didn't do anything, they were immigrants, and so they had, you know, and they went through the Depression, so they actually knew what a bank failure was, okay, where people would actually lose their money. There was no FDIC during the Depression, and so they would have like 10 or 15 bank accounts, right, with small amounts of money divided up, so if one bank went belly up, they didn't get wiped out. And so I remember when T-bills were paying like 18% or something, and my father was in the living room of my grandfather parents' house trying to explain to my, you know, immigrant grandfather that you can get this money, and it's actually you buy the thing at a discount, so you'll get your money, you'll get your interest, you know, basically up front. You buy the thing as a and he didn't believe it. And so after he convinced them, they had to go around to all the banks, withdraw all the money, okay, get all this cashier's checks, and then, you know, go down to the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis and you fill out the forms, you get the T-bills going. I mean, it was a pain in the butt to move money around. There was a lot of friction in the system. There's no friction in the system now. That's why this is happening so quickly. Okay, the friction is no longer there. You can, like I said, you can do everything on your phone during your lunch break in 10 minutes. I mean, that's how I did it. It's not hard. I mean, I've been, you know, ever since we knew that Jay Powell was going to be on this interest rate raising cycle, I've just been pumping more money into T-bills. And you just get, you know, every time they raise rates, you get a raise. Now, that won't go on forever, obviously, because now we're starting to see the, you know, things break. But, you know, that's what you're seeing. And that's why these banks, you know, these banks are not paying, they're not able to in many cases because there's not a lot of loan demand. And what are they going to put the money? If you give them money, what are they going to do with it? Right. So they're not going to pay you for, you know, and a half percent or four. There's some CDs out there you can buy through your brokerage firm. I wouldn't do that. Just put the money in T-bills or like a money market fund, right? That invests in T-bills. That's your best bet with a low cost of management, right? And so you just sit here and wait. This is how wealth is created. You just wait for the bargains now. Wait for the fat pitch. Okay. There will be a time when commercial banks or these regional banks become so cheap, they won't all go out of business. They won't all go belly up. They weren't all mismanaged. They weren't all, you know, pushing the limits. And so, but the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater. And at some point, these things will bottom. This whole thing will change. And then you will get a, you know, a buying opportunity there. That'll be one example. So, again, we haven't seen the full effect of the commercial real estate debacle that seems to be building flow through to these banks. And, you know, as these debts need to be rolled over, as loans need to be rolled over, as the ability to service, we've seen several examples now, kind of like, you know, we talked about, you know, before a volcano erupts, you get these little pre-eruptions and earthquakes around the volcano that are warning you that something big is getting ready to happen. And so we've seen that, right? Where some major firms, I think like BlackRock even have, you know, people have, they've gated the exit of some investment funds into real estate, or they've even handed the keys back to the banks on some buildings they own. So these are the precursors to what's going to happen. And as long as rates stay higher, that's why higher for longer just causes more damages, ultimately causes more bargains. And so the thing to do, in my view, and again, this isn't a good advertisement for the newsletter because it's like, I'm telling you what, I'm not going to pay this guy $150 a year to tell me to go into a money market fund. Well, that's what you should do. And then you wait. You know, the recession, we're in a recession if you look at housing and manufacturing, and employment now is starting to crack. Okay. It's going to be acknowledged by the second half of this year that we're, you know, in a recession. These high rates are just cracking the economy. It takes time. And the flow through effect we talked about, the two things to remember, you know, these things, the lag effect of the rate raising cycle and the QT as it moves through the economy. Okay. The other thing to remember is, you know, some people have speculated that the Federal Reserve actually looks at this whole banking thing, because you've seen, now there's a lot of negative sentiment and reluctance by banks to expand credit. Why would you do that? Because sentiment's negative now. People are scared. Okay. There's a difference between saying, okay, I philosophically understand that rates are moving higher and that the economy should slow down, and then real fear. And so when real fear sets in, and that's an emotional primal response, if you're a loan officer, you're going to really, really be scrutinizing any type of loan. And so the bank credit's now tightening. So that's another tool, if you will, that is going to, not tool, but another item that's going to have an effect on tightening credit. And this is a credit-based economy, okay? Consumer-based credit economy. So, and so this, you can expect more of this, right? I don't know. I'm not a credit analyst. I am not a banking analyst. I have no idea how many more banks are going to go belly up. But I don't think this is over yet. I mean, we have 4,000 plus banks in this country. And I'm going to show you a slide coming up that a lot of them, quite a few of them are in trouble. And the Federal Reserve knows this. So here's the regional bank index closed at a 43-year relative low versus the S&P. You can see that here. You can see how it just basically fell out of bed here. Good chance it goes lower at some point. You don't want to catch a falling safe, right? And people like to use the word falling knife. I heard the meme, don't catch a falling safe. Just step out of the way. It'll hit the ground and the door will pop open and you walk over and pick the cash up. So, I'm not interested in looking at this until, like I said, there's going to be some banks that are going to go, as the baby gets thrown out with bathwater when this thing turns, which it eventually will. Eventually, the Fed will cut rates and things will normalize again in the banking sector. And there's going to be some bargains there. There's going to be, but we don't know why try to pick the bottom now? I mean, with rates, you still have people, you still have rates very high. The language, the narrative from the Fed is higher for longer. So until we see the Fed crack and start lowering rates, then there's no reason to even look at this. It's just monitor things, be patient. Again, as Buffett said, to use the cliches, you're standing at the plate and you're getting receiving pitches over the plate, or you're receiving pitches, but there's no balls or strikes being called. You can stand there as long as you want and wait for that pitch right in your wheelhouse and knock it out of the ballpark. That's how the real wealth is created. So that's what we're doing. In the meantime, sell in May and go away. Just, enjoy your spring and summer and come back at Labor Day. We'll see what's going on. And, as things, that's why I'm adopting kind of that. I really am a big fan of that hope cycle analysis, because that will tell you it's not really going to forecast anything, but it's kind of telling you what's going on now, casting, what's going on. And then you'll be able to see things turn. It'll start turning again as rates decline. That will translate into the housing market, turning. That will then feed into, orders for increased goods. That will, flow into higher corporate profits, and then employment will turn last. Okay, so we have the tools in place to see this. Okay, it's all about, what has happened in the past, probabilities. I don't think things will be too different this time. I don't think it's the end of the US, economy. So we'll have to see what happens. This could be a very deep recession, could be a light recession. We don't really know. So we do know that the probabilities are that once the recession starts and the Fed cuts rates, that that's when the stock market will have another leg down. And so we're nowhere near a bottom yet. I'm thinking, a lot of people are thinking, if you listen to some analysts, but if you look at like the Buffett indicator for market capitalization as a percent of GDP, we got a long way to go down. Maybe 3,200 on the S&P is something to be looking at. So nowhere near the bottom here, even though we're at a 43-year low, the regional bank index, it's not time to step out there and try to pick a bottom yet. There will be 3 to 5 times returns on some of these banks, and some of these things will be 10 baggers. But it's not time yet. And so bank is the bank crisis just getting started. This was a tweet that came from the, I guess, a Federal Reserve study that was done recently. And it says at third quarter end, I think this was last year, 722 banks reported unrealized losses exceeding 50% of capital. And it says 31 of these banks report negative tangible equity levels. Banks reporting negative tangible equity are currently not able to borrow new money from Federal Home Loan banks and may lose the ability to sell loans to government-sponsored enterprises. It says some banks are taking actions to shelter further market losses, including changing the accounting treatment of their securities, right? Thus, their intent to use securities for liquidity purposes, hedging their interest rate risk, and or retaining more tangible capital. So there's a lot more people swimming without shorts. And as the tide continues to go out, we can anticipate more of these things surfacing and more problems surfacing. Again, this was a recent Federal Reserve study. So they know what's going on. I don't think they're sad about it, because I think, you know, in the majority of the world, most countries don't have 4,000 banks. You know, I think like in Canada, there's four or five major banks that the deposits are concentrated in. And I'm not so sure that, you know, the Federal Reserve wouldn't want to see more banks go away, as long as it doesn't turn into a full-blown crisis. You know, again, they get the benefit of the banking sector helping them tighten credit and lower this inflation. But I think that they've, you know, they're way over their skis again. And, you know, if you look at the 2-year versus the, I'm not going to get into that again. We'll just see what happens. So here's, you know, a big part of the problem, right? Money market holdings. This is people putting things into short term, like T-bills and money market funds, and invest in short term securities, hit record $5.3 trillion in week ended May 3rd. It's up $447 billion in 1 week, up $100 billion in 2 weeks. The bank run is accelerating. Again, now people are waking up. Now there's more and more. This, again, the era of social media, 24-hour news, the ability to swipe right and do anything on your phone. Again, you know, there's no friction. And that's why this, I think, will accelerate. People are going, well, this is, you know, I have like $5,000 in a savings account. Why don't I just put it in a money market fund and get, you know, I'm getting 10 basis points or 25 basis points from, you know, Wells Fargo savings account. All I have to do is link this brokerage account or link this to Treasury Direct, and I can just buy T-bills. That's how easy it is. And then you just, like I said, you just do it on your couch on during a commercial in a baseball game. That's how fast it can be done. And so I think you're going to see more of this. It's going to put more pressure, right, on the banking system. But it's, you know, if you're smart, that's what you do. I mean, you should be, you know, taking that, you know, 5% return and, you know, just biding your time. And I think you're going to see more of it. This is Hugh Henry. He's a guy that I followed. He was a hedge fund manager. He had a lot of, back when he used to wear suits and cut his hair. I mean, he comes off as, I think he lives on St. Bart's now. He kind of just, you know, semi-retired. I don't know if he's running money still. He has a Twitter account. He's kind of a little bit off the wall, but this is a, he kind of had this 5 or 6 minute clip here on Bloomberg, and he talks about, you know, that yes, he feels the banking crisis can get a lot worse, that you could actually see a situation where, you know, he talks about like these hedge funds closing down where they gated investors from leaving, right? Because if too many people rushed out in fear, they don't have the money, and then the assets that they have are declining in value. They can't pay the people back. So they gate, they don't let people leave. And he talks about, you know, in some of these big funds, it can take 2 years to get your money out. And he said that, you know, something similar, he's not predicting it would happen, but something similar could happen in the, if the banking sector gets really out of control, where they say, you know, your deposits, your savings accounts, if you're gated, you just right click or right swipe at your money out. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't think he's saying it's going to happen, but it's a possibility. Ultimately, what needs to happen is the Fed needs to cut rates and get these banks back on side, because right now they're just getting killed. you may not agree with that, but that's kind of what needs to happen. I thought it was very a pretty good interview. I'll put a link to the actual interview. But this is was kind of interesting discussion. I kind of would like to get one of those hats too. Acid capitalist is kind of cool. But yeah, check that out. It's I'll put a link to it in the show notes. So this was a back in April from Frank Talks. He was talking about some analysts that were talking about probabilities and recession possibly in Q4 of 2023 or Q1 of 2024. This is from one of the Frank Talks in April. I think it was before Easter. It said over the past 70 years, a Fed pause. You're talking about a Fed pause now, because I think that's what we're talking about now. I mean, Jay Powell didn't say that, but that's kind of what I think everybody's kind of anticipating. Maybe he'll keep raising rates. Then I think things will just get worse. But it says, though, that if you look at the history of everything, that's what we have to go on to kind of figure what would happen if, you know, if things play out like they've played out in the past, and what's the probability of that happening. So anyways, over the past 70 years, a Fed pause was followed by an economic recession 75% of the time, with an average lag of 6 months. And so if we're pausing now, or, you know, then we could be looking at a recession average, you know, starting in the fourth quarter. An acknowledgement. I think there's already a housing recession and a manufacturing recession. You know, I think the service sector is booming still. We know that. So anyways, it said, this is according to CLSA analysts. The two analysts believe that the Fed has just one more hike. This, like I said, was in April. So they said one more hike, which would have been the May hike that we just saw, before it pauses and begins to reverse course. The cycle should be complete by July, Redman and Chen estimate. So that, again, puts you at late fourth quarter, early first quarter. Now, remember, you have an election next year, too. If we're going to be in a recession late in 23, going into 24, they have to begin cutting rates and stimulating the economy. Otherwise, you're going to have the husk of Joe Biden standing there with a trying to get reelected in the middle of a recession. So don't lose sight of that. And remember the lag effects. You got to start cutting rates sooner rather than later. You can't wait till, you know, this time next year and be cutting rates and think it's going to have an effect on the election. And believe me, don't think for a minute that these things are not political. They are. So they go on to say, the time to buy equities is when the manufacturing PMI bottoms, which we're tracking it as part of our my analysis and trying to recreate the hope cycle. When manufacturing PMI bottoms after the start of the recession, doing so resulted in positive 12-month returns 7 out of 8 times. Again, see, we play probabilities here. We're looking for, so it's not time to be buying equities now, for an average return of 26%. I threw this in there because this was another quote that was from this week, but I wanted to throw this in here just because we're talking about, you know, when's the Fed going to pause, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to try to analyze it and predict it. It's a mug's game. Just understanding that when they do, or when they begin cut, this is what we can anticipate happening. That's the whole purpose of this analysis, not to predict when they're going to actually do it. Who knows? Former Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas President Robert Kaplan said this. He said this this week, that the banking situation, quote, the banking situation may well be more serious than we currently understand, unquote. Well, we do think it's worse because the Federal Reserve has already analyzed this and knows it can get worse. He added that he supported, quote, a hawkish pause, unquote, in interest rates, which, alas, didn't happen. So again, we watch the data. We, you know, look at, you know, permits for new houses, housing starts, ISM manufacturing PMIs, new orders indexes, diffusion indexes from New York, Philadelphia, these type of things. They all give us a clue to what's happening, right? And operating earnings estimates going forward, and finally, employment, to give us a clue where we're at in this cycle. Again, these are, you know, we're not trying to predict. I can't predict when things will start. It's just that looking at what has happened in the past. Again, I look at the probabilities, like in poker. If I get ace, ace, I have, if I play that hand the same way in the right position, you know, 10,000 times, the computer tells me I'm going to win so like 54% of the time. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's going to be above 50%. It doesn't mean each individual hand I'm going to win. Okay. It's like, okay, my probabilities, and I should be pressing things. This would be the time to, you know, based on the situation I'm in. So that's what we're doing. What are the probabilities based on, unless you think that, you know, the world's going to end, and I don't think that's going to happen. So yet. So I just think these are interesting things. I mean, I actually get a kick out of this intellectually, looking at this stuff, trying to, you know, analyze this data. You know, a lot of people just say like, hey, just give me some actionable advice here, or some, what are you doing based on all this? That's all I want to know. But I think it's kind of fun to get in there and take the back of the watch off and see how everything really works. Maybe you find this boring or not useful, but you know, this is what we're looking at. So again, these are the last, I believe, 14 rate raising cycles since 1950. What has it resulted in 11 out of the 14 rate raising cycles since 1950, you've had a recession, 11 out of 14, and the other three, you had a quote soft landing. So my suggestion to you that after 10 years of zero rates, basically, and free money, and being on that people mover, like Howard Marks says, do you think we're going to have a soft landing? I don't think so. We're going to have a recession. And there's a good probability it could be very deep and very painful. So we'll see. We don't know. Like I said, this employment thing's kind of muddying the waters. It's not really moving up like a lot of people anticipated it. But I think we're starting to see cracks. So we watch. So that kind of segues into oil. It's like you saw oil getting destroyed over, I think it's the third week in a row we're down. Last week it was really getting killed. Remember something about the oil market, right? So, you know, if we have everybody saying, well, oil is going to continue to drop because we're in a globalized, synchronized economic decline. Well, that's not actually true, because if you look at global liquidity indicators, they look to have bottomed last October, the Bank of England and China, you know. So we have to, you have to keep those things in mind too, just because you can't just look at the U.S. on everything, okay, or just Europe. There's a whole rest of the world out there we have to look at. So one of the things, and there's a lot of factors that go into this, the problem with the oil market is that there's so many more contracts that are traded, paper contracts, than there are. And I'm not a conspiracy nut, I'm just telling you how it is. And so when you get headlines, a lot of this stuff is driven by algorithms. Okay, PMI is down, the Fed raised rates, recession. That's what those things are programmed to do too. Look at probabilities, and you want to be the first one out the door. So the selling starts, and then when they drop sufficiently, then the algorithms pick up on that, pile on the short side, and you get these huge, volatility. This is what we've been talking about. I've been warning about. You're going to have tremendous volatility in a lot of these markets with, you know, as liquidity tightens. Okay. And it's been tightening. We've been talking about this. And so I like to go back and look at the fundamentals, because ultimately in the short and medium term, yes, liquidity and sentiment will drive the market, but in the end, fundamentals will rule. But then again, people say, well, John, I mean, when the oil price goes down 10 bucks a barrel in 1 week, then oil stocks drop. Yes. I mean, I can't give you a panacea. I can't soothe your fears. If you are laying at wake at night, staring at your ceiling and your stomach's turning about, should I sell my oil stocks? Then you should sell your oil stocks. You shouldn't be in that emotional state. It's the same thing I talked about uranium. Okay. We do have bullish fundamental news. Here's one of the things that's fundamentally bullish. It says Russia raises proportion of idled wells. You know, one of the things that happened was, you know, you had the OPEC plus cuts go into place. Russia was being accused of they were jamming a lot of oil into the market earlier this year, especially with the sanctions coming on. More sanctions came on in February. So they want, you know, they need the money for the war. Okay. I mean, come on, they're in the middle of a war. with Ukraine and NATO. So they have to, they need money. So this is how they get money. So I do think though that they're, they're looking past this. You see the amount of idled or shut-in wells has been increasing. That should give you an indication that, production should come in. I'm not saying they're going to meet their goals. I'm not going to say the Russians don't cheat. I'm not going to say that the Saudis or Omanis don't cheat. I'm not in the, energy, Ministry of Energy in any of these countries. But it appears, we just look at the data points. And so these wells are, maybe they're, they did their push, they pushed the crude out as best they could, and now they're, getting on side with the rest of OPEC to do their like 500 or 600,000 barrel a day cut. So we'll see. Again, fundamentally, right? One analyst that I follow on Twitter, he said that, well, cuts are not positive. If you're cutting supply, that means that the market's weak. I don't disagree with that. I mean, they're it doesn't take much of an oversupply or undersupply in any one market, commodity market, to have the price really swing. Okay. But what I'm saying is that, supply is going to be pressured over time. Doesn't I don't know what's going to happen in the next 30 or 60 days or 3 months or 6 months, but I know that insufficient investment is going to lead to supply shortage or insufficient supply to meet the rising demand. And if you just focus on the United States and Europe, that's not where the growth of petroleum demand is coming from. It's coming from emerging markets. It's coming from the global East and South. It's coming from India. It's coming from China. It's coming from, the Philippines, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Africa with 1 billion people. I mean, it's just going on and on and on. Okay. That's where you need to look. And is the investment sufficient to meet that rising demand? If demand in the West falls off over time, then it just, as the price of crude goes down, guess what's going to happen? The emerging markets are going to increase their usage. Okay, that's what's going to happen. So I think that, can you have a great financial crisis situation? Can you have a pandemic-like reaction in the market where you get this plunge down? Yes. Then you get down to it. Can you have a that can happen. That's not a 0% probability. Okay. But what has happened every single time? It's came right back because oil is the it enables it's the bloodstream, it's the nourishment, it's what's required for civilization. And so I'm still in that camp that if you don't invest enough, you're going to eventually have a supply problem, and that's where we're heading. Here's Chinese flights above pre-COVID levels now. So you now have Chinese flights are above when the pandemic. I mean, if you look at a long-term chart of Chinese tourism and things like that, it's been in a 45-degree angle. The thing that interrupted it was COVID. Well, that's over with now, and China is slowly but surely, returning to trend. It's going to take the rest of this year and into next year, and that's the same thing. If you look at the airport operators around the world that I look at that are publicly traded, you'll notice they had the big drop after the pandemic, and they've been slowly, traffic's been building quarter after quarter. Okay, so we're still not back in many places to pre-COVID. We are in China and India, but other places we're still building. So that demand is still there. It's that demand's still coming. Okay. And again, if the price of crude drops from 100 to 60, then flight prices drop, transportation prices drop, the consumption of the fuel has a tendency to increase in these emerging markets. Again, you can't just stay focused on what's happening at Cushing, Oklahoma, and in the US. I mean, this had a refinery blow up in Deer Park. I was coming back from a job site inspection yesterday, and I was going over the Ship Channel Bridge, and a freaking refinery blew up. Okay, well, that'll have a short-term effect, but in the big scheme of things, it doesn't matter. So I think it was a Shell refinery, but anyways, yeah, it's kind of scary when you're driving past there and flames are, flare stacks are 100 feet in the air, and there's flames coming out of one of the units, and you're like just driving by this thing at eye level on the Ship Channel Bridge. It's kind of cool, not cool, but a little intimidating. So anyways, yeah, we're returning. So all of these things come into play, right? You have to what's the totality of this? Again, I use the, you can go on YouTube. I like watching these videos about the boaters that go in and out of these inlets in Florida, right? There's inlets all along there between the intercoastal waterway and the ocean. And as the tide comes in and out, it makes it more treacherous to, you have to really know what you're doing to transit the inlet at these times when either the tide's going in or out. And a lot of people don't know what they're doing and they get themselves in trouble. And this is kind of what we have going on here, right? We have this push-pull, pulling back and forth, supply and demand, things that are affecting both sides. And then what comes out totality in the end is, you know, it's very volatile. Okay. And then what are we going to be looking at? Lower prices? There's a very good chance we could have lower prices for some period of time. But again, where are we at in the cycle, right? If we're going to enter a recession in the US, yes, we will see demand go down. Is it going to be sufficient to overcome the demand increase around the world? So again, in a context of global liquidity having probably bottomed sometime last year, and now, you know, making with a tendency, you should be looking for things to get more easy as we go forward. Okay. Or people, you'll see more central banks pausing and then eventually cutting. So a lot of things come into play. Again, if you have new money, you can sit there and wait. There's no reason to come running in right now until you get more certainty. But that's, you know, I don't try to trade these things. Some people are successful traders. They should, you know, create, you know, a YouTube channel and tell people how to trade successfully. I'd be interested. What happens is they get, these guys are not consistent. They get, and I just try to play the probabilities. So here's some news that came out yesterday or a couple days ago. This is what I'm talking about, right? The United States will permit Chinese airlines to increase passenger flights between the two countries to 12 round trips a week, equal to the number China has allowed for U.S. airlines, the United States Department of Transportation said on Wednesday. Although China has downgraded its COVID-19 management and lifted travel restrictions on January 8th, the number of passenger flights remains significantly lower than those pre-pandemic. And these international flights are the big gas-guzzling flights, right? So you say, okay, well, 12 round trips a week. What does that mean, John? Well, before COVID, it was like 150 flights a week round trip between China and the U.S. So we have a long way to go, and the trend is up. And so you should see demand incrementally stacking over time. And you're already at record flights. I think there's, if you read this article, which I'll put a link to it, there's like more and more countries are returning to, you know, international travel between China and them. So as this pandemic recedes, which it has, you know, I was talking to my wife about the possibility of her returning to the U.S. from Ukraine, and she was all worried about COVID, having to get inoculated or whatever, because that was a requirement. Well, that's all been dropped now, too. You know, you don't have, I mean, she's a green card holder. She didn't need to worry about it anyways, but international travelers, I think they lifted that requirement now, I think or it's lifting by May 11th or something like that. So as this stuff recedes, you know, we still have to recover back to what we were talking about or where we were before. Okay. And then we will get back onto trend growth, because if you look at Chinese and Indians and emerging markets, their flight data, they're traveling, they're middle class now. Once people become part of the middle class, they want to start going on vacations. They want to start visiting. I mean, I lamented once when I was at St. Petersburg, Russia, several years ago, before the pandemic, and I couldn't stand it. I would always, after the first couple of days, I realized that it was just flooded with Chinese tour groups. It was unbelievable. I mean, they become stomping. You'd be sitting there trying to like analyze or look at something at the Hermitage, very few people. And all of a sudden this group comes through of like 60 people. All you hear is camera shutters going, and they have like a flag, a guy at the start. They say a few words and move on. You got to get out of the way. It's like a buffalo herd coming through there. And so I suspect that we'll head back to that, you know, eventually, that type of tourism and things like that. And it won't just be the Chinese, it'll be other people. As people enter the middle class, they're going to want to have, just like you in the U.S. and Europe, you like to vacation, you like to have new experiences, you like to travel to places. Other people are going to want to do the same. So it says here, it is the first flight increase between the two countries allowed by the U.S. since August 2020. So again, the recovery in this demand will increase. This isn't the only driver. I just point this out because it is a big driver, but it's not the only one. If the market recovers well, the number of international flights to and from China by the end of the year is expected to reach about 80% of the level before COVID. So if everything stays the same, we get back to 80% of the pre-pandemic flight levels, and then we'll just continue to increase over time with about 7,300 flights per week. That's China in total, not just to the US. But anyways, you get the point. So this was a chart. I'll put a link to it. It's that outfit that does all those cool infographics. And one of the things they were talking about here, they were showing, I didn't want to put the other one on because the graph was kind of busy, but it kind of showed that chart that we've showed many times in the past, which is the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index versus the S&P 500, showing it, commodities being at a 50-year low relative to equities as measured by the S&P 500. But this goes into kind of these super cycles of commodities, which, I'm an advocate of, that we are in a beginning stages of at least a decade-long cycle, upcycle in commodities that will be punctuated again with cyclical pullbacks. But what I liked about here was it shows the peak of the super cycle from long-term trend, trough of the cycle from trough to trough, because and what you can, experience in downturns it of cyclically inside of a secular trend, and then the length of the cycle in years, and then the upswing years and the downswing years. The last peak year for commodities was 2011, which is now 11 or 12 years ago. And you've heard me harp on and on about the underinvestment, not just in oil and gas and energy, but in all commodities, right? And now with the current zeitgeist of these mineral intensive energy transition, I mean, the writing's on the wall. And so I just thought this was interesting. I'll put a link to the infographics so you can look at it yourself. They have an article along with it, short article that's kind of if you're not familiar with this, but I think most people listening to this podcast or watch these videos kind of understand my thesis vis-a-vis what I think is going to happen with the resource markets over the next decade. So I like this. This was a good article. It was called, this is the actual name of the article, "Revenge of the Turds." What the point of this is the hype cycles, right? And what they did was they looked at Google search terms for like these different things: .com, Bitcoin, cannabis, wearable tech, solar, 3D printing, blah 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 blah. Peak search interest when all the bleacher bums and shoe clerks and retail investors were searching, after these big moves had happened in a lot of these things. Then the bleacher bums show up when they, when Jim Cramer starts talking about it, well after the peak or near the peak. And then what was the subsequent, once retail is searching on Google and you get these massive search explosions looking for this is the typical return. So you don't, that's not how we do things. We buy things that are bombed out, buy things that are cheap. We don't follow retail into Bitcoin at the top or the dot-com bubble. I mean, I just find it fascinating. I think two things here, don't fall into these things. I think the Google, I've talked about using Google search analysis myself on terms to see where we are with sentiment. It's been useful for myself. But I think if you go back and you think about these, like cannabis, for example, was a recent one. I mean, it's down like 95 or 97%. Okay. Do I think eventually it might have some possibility of recovery? Yeah. I mean, it's going to have to thin out. Legislation's going to have to change. I would like to see the cannabis ETF go away. Okay. That would be a signal to me that, you're near a bottom. But there's no guarantee that that would happen. Okay. And it's the same thing. You just don't want to get, I guess the point is, these are interesting, sentiment indicators, or not sentiment indicators, but the Google search analysis is, but just saying that human behavior doesn't change. Retail schlubs, and guys, people say, well, man, John, you're pretty harsh on retail. I was a retail schlub. Okay. When I first started investing, I didn't know what I was doing. I made all kinds of dumb mistakes. Okay. I would make linear extrapolations on, well, these earnings, and it's just going to keep going on forever. And I didn't know how tops were formed. I didn't understand how the markets worked. I didn't understand any of this. Okay. And I fell for some of this stuff. Okay. I learned my lesson well before this .com thing. I played it on the downside. I was just shocked about how, but guess what? In 2008, when we had the last like run in resource markets, I got sucked into it, right? I leveraged myself up. So what does Munger say are the three things that kill people financially? Liquors, ladies, and leverage. And so, you know, I could be a lot further along than I am now, except I leveraged myself up because I was going to swing all in, and I got taken out. Luckily, I was able to recover and I've learned my lesson. So that's what I'm trying to tell you guys. I've already been there. I've been a retail schlub, a bleacher bum, a shoe clerk. Okay. You don't need to be one. Okay. You don't need to lose that time and take those losses. Remember, first rule, don't lose. Second rule, don't forget the first rule. I mean, these are all cliches, but they work, guys. You're traveling down the same road many people have already traveled. Just read the road signs, read the signals that people have left. That's the point I'm trying to make. So I'll put a link to this article. It's fascinating and interesting. So a couple clown world things here. So I'm not exactly sure about this. I got to do some more research, but I've read about this week. This is the, you know, I'm not a big fan of trying to make everybody equal. Everybody isn't equal. They are equal under the law. People are equal. You know, people are have value as creations of God. That's what I believe, but people are not equal. It's not fair that I'm going bald and some people have full heads of hair. That's just how it is, right? I'm joking, of course. Some people are taller, some people are shorter, some people have disabilities, some people have high IQs, some people have low IQs, some people had two-parent homes, some people have to struggle out of poverty. It's just the way it is. It's the way the world is. And so there's a view by some folks in society that, well, we have to make everything equal. Everybody has to be equal outcomes. And the problem with that is that that's not achievable. We saw that the last century where different regimes tried that and they ended up they murdered around 100 million people. Again, you can read Gulag Archipelago. You can watch The Killing Fields. You can read The Black Book of Communism, which some French former communists wrote to basically catalog all of the deprivations, purges, liquidations, imprisonments, suppressions that all these different regimes did, all with the view to do what? Make an equal society, okay? Because it's against human nature. Again, this is the whole problem that I have with what's going on in society. So I'm going to get off my soapbox and tell you what this. This is not the end all be all. This won't cause the end of Western civilization. But again, this is death by a thousand cuts, guys. And so I'll put a link to the article. It says basically the Federal Housing Finance Agency implemented major changes on Monday, changes to the fee structure of conventional mortgages guaranteed by Fannie Mae, known as, these two, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. These changes would effectively lower the fee gap between borrowers with high credit scores and those with low ones in a government effort to make, quote, home ownership more affordable, unquote, for underserved communities and first-time buyers. Middle-income home buyers argue it's disadvantages to those more financially prepared to buy a house. In simpler terms, the new changes show that the higher one's credit score is, along with giving a larger down payment, the more you have to pay. And so there's different fees for these things. And if you have a good credit score, if you know you build a good credit score by your behavior, by your judicious use and management of credit, by your consistent ability to pay on time and do that over a long period of time and to be a steward of capital, a good steward. Now, the bleacher bum is now going to come in the comments and say, well, what about the somebody that, yes, People have unanticipated medical things and they get wiped out and they're financial and they have to live off credit cards. I get it. But that's not most people. Most people that have low credit scores because they don't manage their credit properly. And ultimately, in my worldview, you're individually responsible for yourself, regardless of the circumstances you're put in. I did not have a silver spoon. I came from lower middle class. I built myself up over time. A lot of people helped me. I had mentors and help. Okay. But what you got to do is it's a long, how you get wealthy, how you get a good credit score. These are long-term prospects that you have to manage. They don't teach this in high school because there's too busy teaching that a person that dresses up as a woman that has a penis is somehow a woman. That's more important than teaching people how the banking system works, how compounding wealth works over time, how to write a check and manage a checking account. These things are not taught. How to get and maintain a top credit score. These things are not taught. And there's benefits to doing this, guys. There's benefits when you have a higher credit score. So now what the government's going to do is, we're going to say, well, the lowest common denominator, we're gonna put everything for their benefit and punish people that do the right thing. That's how I take this. Now I need to do some more investigation to see exactly what this is. But again, this is not just this isn't going to kill the U.S. economy. This isn't the end of Western civilization. But this is where we're heading, right? This is the end. It's just the more degradation and, trying to make everybody have an equal outcome. It's not possible. The only way you can do that is by at least move in that direction is restricting freedoms, restricting liberty, taking from the producers and giving to the non-producers, taking from the responsible and giving to the people. I'll just say it, to each according to his needs, from each according to his means, right? So that's how I look at it. And it's going to continue. It's not going to get better. Have a totally different country than we had 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. A lot of people think that that is progress. It depends. The demographics have shifted now. People vote, unfortunately, have a tendency, I think, to vote a certain way based on the demographics. I'm not going to get any more. You can infer what you like from that. And so, a lot of people that are immigrating to this country don't come from places that have a steeped in the values of the founding fathers of this country. Let's put it that way. And a lot of people will say, well, they're fine with that because, but that's not going, that's why I think that, a lot of people, I don't see, this is why I think you're in a long-term decline. But again, there's a lot of ruin in a country. It's not going to happen overnight. All right. One last thing, because I hate this guy. Here's our buddy from the World Economic Forum, Yuval Noah Harari. He's the little stooge advisor to the, Klaus Schwab and all that. Here's another video. It's kind of edited a little bit, but you get the gist. They kind of use it here, WEF puppet. That's what he is. I really do not like this guy. He's a very dangerous person. He's very intelligent. He's very elitist, snobbish. He's part. When you talk about the managerial class or the technocratic class that wants to rule over everybody else, this is the kind of person you're talking about. This is the mindset. This is how they talk and act. And again, as I said during the pandemic, they have it in your face. They don't care that you know, okay? Because they feel that they have the momentum and they don't really care. I mean, you see people like, for example, one of my favorite people to listen to, who's really a good fighter about this whole pandemic thing, and now what's happening as repercussions is the MEP in the European Parliament from Germany, Christine Anderson, and she's very, very well spoken. She traveled to Canada recently. She's a member of the party of AFD, Alternative for Germany. And she went to Canada and met with some people that were sympathetic to the same views, supporting the Canadian truckers, things like that. And of course, the Canadian media took after her. the leader of the Conservative Party that's going to be trying to run against Trudeau. I forget his name, Poilievre or whatever his name is, the so-called conservative. He denounced her as being a racist and a, you know, all these horrible things, which she's not. She's just as against the establishment. And this guy is the establishment. This is the guy that's trying to. And what he says here is, let's get back to what he says, and I'll put a link to the video. It says, leading advisor to the World Economic Forum, Yuval Noah Harari, suggests that the totalitarian restrictions implemented in response to the scandemic, this is the words of this tweeter, not me, including stopping all flights and locking down entire countries, will make people, quote, more open to radical ideas about how to deal with climate change. You see where we're going, guys? Climate change is going to be the next push to control you. Did you see the, I'll put a link to the YouTube video of Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, who's one of my favorite legislators. I love this guy. He's like, knows how to like tear apart these witnesses. He had a deputy administrator or the deputy administrator or something from the one of the agencies, Department of Energy or one of them. And the guy was up there talking about we have to spend $50 trillion to get to net zero by 2050, just in the U.S., $50 trillion. So Senator Kennedy asked him, well, first he was asking him, how much do we have to spend to do this? And the guy was like, well, other experts, he said, well, you're the deputy director or the deputy administrator. You don't know how much we need to spend. And if we, then he trapped him again, if we spend that, how much will it reduce CO2 emissions and have an effect on, you know, the climate? The guy couldn't answer it. So it's a scam. It's always about more money for them and more control. Okay. And that's not, that's just how I look at it, guys. And this has to be watched because, again, now I just talked about it earlier in this video. Yes, they're loosening up all the airlines and all that stuff and travel again. But again, it's always two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. You know, Christine Anderson was talking about these 15-minute cities. This isn't for your benefit or for, that's how it's going to be couched. It's so that they can control you, okay? They want total control. They want to control your money, your health. They want you to be able to buzz in and out, and then they can just turn you off. They can unperson you. You can be forced. I mean, I talked about the story about, like in China, about the guy that had such a low social credit score for whatever reason that he had to walk from, like, you know, I'd go to the cities to work. He had to walk from like one of the major cities on the coast to his village. It was like 300 miles or something because his social credit score, for whatever reason, was so low that he couldn't get a train ticket. He couldn't get an airline ticket. He couldn't interact with society. He had to walk and, you know, sleep by the side of the road, I guess, and bum food off people. That's what they want to do. And most people will go along with it if they're forced into being uncomfortable. We saw that. And this is what Mr. Harari's talking about in this video. And so most people just aren't going to get it. They don't want to. They don't want their mind to go there. Because if you go there, it's very frightening. And that's where we're heading. And it's everything's going to be couched in. It's going to make it easier for you. It's going to be better for you. Just look at how beneficial it will be. And we're going to solve the climate. We're going to solve a non-problem. And you can see how it's slowly shifting. This is what they've always wanted to do. And now they've proved to themselves that they can lock you down. They've proved to you that they can make you wear a fart mask on your face and you don't, you know, fabric, you know, on your face, and you'll do whatever because you want to travel. You want to do this. You'll just do it because you don't want to be unemployed. You don't want to be able not to buy food. There will always be people that won't go along with it, but they're going to do everything they can to get as many people on side as possible. And that's where we're heading, at least in the West. Okay, guys, that's it for this week. Appreciate it. Continue to keep going up in the subscriptions or the people watching the YouTube videos. So I do appreciate that. Again, I do make provocative statements. Hit me up in the comments. I've been busy recently over the last several weeks, so I haven't engaged in the comments that much. I'll be making more of an effort to do that. The Actionable Intelligence Alert newsletter, $150 annual subscription, 12 issues. You get links to the back issues. You get access to the Discord where we have a lot of good conversation. Please consider that if this type of discussion leads you to wanting to understand how we take advantage of that in the markets. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.